Welcome to the Growth Law Firm podcast, where we see if growth gets it. So let's talk about something we were just discussing a couple days ago. Gosh, we've been discussing this topic for more than just a couple days, for decades, it seems, you know, catastrophic crashes and how to handle and how to help these cases where we're trying to do our best for somebody who, well, I think you were just saying, Sam, somebody who was hit by a truck and they had to have knee surgery. I mean, I think that's a pretty catastrophic situation. Your life is turned upside down. But let me go back to the beginning here. So we have Sam, one of our law clerks. Say hi, Sam.
Hi.
Sam, where do you go to law school?
Marquette.
Okay, Marquette University Law School. And Danielle, you are a?
Paralegal.
And what do you do here at Growth Law Firm?
Work up all the files.
Okay. So everything.
Everything.
So you are helping, like just now I saw you watching a video of a crash. And then we were just talking about pleadings, and pleadings are formal documents that you file with a court. And those documents, do you recall what they were?
Summons and complaint.
Summons and complaint. And a summons is? What's a summons do?
Notifies you of the case.
There you go. It summons you.
Summons you in the case.
I'm looking at Sam now. It summons you to court. I say, hey, come on over to court. That's a summons. And then the complaint is what you are complaining about, what you're saying, what you're alleging. So a summons, a complaint sounds kind of official, and we kind of say it really quick because we say it all the time. But a summons and complaint, they're two separate documents. And if you don't file them correctly, you don't have a case.
True.
True. Good answer. All right. So, but back to our catastrophic situation here. So I'm just trying to think, you know, how we should talk about this, because these really are cases that can take a lot longer for a couple different reasons. I know that one of our attorneys just settled a case where the person had a horrific leg injury and will have a lifelong limp and lost the use of part of his leg because of a tractor trailer crash, and it injured three people in his vehicle. It was just a horrific accident. I can still see the car, because we had to have an expert go out and pull the black box from that vehicle to see actually what happened, because, of course, the other vehicle said they weren't at fault. And now, years later, here we are, and that vehicle, their insurance paid every bit of insurance. They, quote-unquote, tendered the limits to us because of this catastrophic case. So, all right, Danielle, so this is a question for you about catastrophic crashes, catastrophic incidents. Are they worked up differently? Do you help those clients differently than somebody who was involved in a small accident, small crash that they go to the doctor once?
No.
Why not?
Because all the cases should be worked up the same.
Well, I agree with you.
And all the clients should be treated the same.
I agree with you. But what makes a catastrophic crash different than a crash where somebody goes to their doctor once and sees a physical therapist three times?
Well, the medicals are going to be different.
Yeah.
You're going to be high medicals because catastrophic injuries, there's a lot more medical treatment involved.
So that's a good point. So Sam, in the case you were talking about, they had surgery?
Yes.
And were they, what kind of problems did they have because of the surgery?
A loss of range of motion in the knee. There was like severe pain even after the surgery. Just it's going to be there forever, probably.
So then, you know, catastrophic crashes, catastrophic injuries mean catastrophic losses, really. So right there, when you're saying loss of range of motion, those kind of things, depending on what that person does for a living, they probably have time off work. They have, you know, in essence, a life-changing event.
She had to retire because she couldn't do her job anymore.
There you go. So that then goes back to you, Danielle, that when these cases come in, and we have a case now, we can't say the name, obviously, but we have a case now that called us right after the crash, and this client was in the hospital for weeks, and hasn't been able to pay rent. I know we had to talk to the landlord. There's all those things that you just don't think of, right? Because you can't go to work. So if you don't work, you can't pay your rent. Maybe you can't eat because you don't have the ability to go to the store. And if you're in the hospital, you know, thankfully you're in the hospital, so they'll give you food. But once they send you home, then what do? You know, you rely on your friends and family, and you rely on us to some extent to figure out what's the plan so you can get to some kind of normalcy. And when is that going to be? You know, hopefully by calling us, we can help you get there sooner rather than later. But my goodness, I mean, these kind of situations are pretty tough. So in the case that you and I are kind of thinking about right now, but we're not going to say the name of, in that case, I know she was in the hospital, or this person was in the hospital for weeks.
Weeks.
And then
for months.
So how does that work? How do we prove up that they lost work, lost wages, a loss of earning capacity is kind of the technical way of saying it. How do we show that to the at-fault driver, the at-fault insurance company?
Well, it'll be documented in the medical records.
Okay.
Hopefully there'll be documentation saying they can't work in the medical records. That's the ideal case scenario, I guess.
And then who do you request like a wage loss document from?
You can request it directly from whoever their employer's HR department.
And is that something that you do or you ask the client to do?
A combination. Some are very, would prefer that they do it themselves, take the paperwork to their HR department. Others are, you know, because of the injury, they just are incapable of dealing with it at that point. So then I would deal with it.
Sure. Okay. And then going forward, what if this person, like Sam was talking about, has long-term problems and they're going to have, I'll say the technical term, a loss of earning capacity going forward? How do we prove that? How do we show that?
So then we would bring in an expert.
And the expert, what kind of expert? I'm going to put Sam on the line here. Do you know what kind of expert that is? I don't expect you to know, by the way.
Isn't it like the jukebox expert?
A jukebox expert?
Oh, that's what Tom always called it.
Jukebox? Jukebox?
Never
heard that.
Do you know what a jukebox is?
Yeah.
What is it?
You go up to and you play whatever song you want to if they have it in there.
Okay. So like a jack of all trades, I guess, expert?
Yeah. As okay. Tom put it, they'll say whatever you tell, put the money in, tell them to play.
So, no, that's not a jukebox. So the defense used jukebox. If there's, this is funny because this is another podcast I would love to do. So there are I would call those hired gun experts, hired guns that the defense uses them all the time, that you tell them, hey, we'll pay a grand and you'll say whatever, you know, is going on. This is a specific kind of expert that we would need.
No idea.
Okay. It's called a vocational expert or a vocational consultant. So somebody that like works for the state, not works for, but one of their jobs is to help people who are on disability. And I think it's DVR, right?
Correct.
The Department of Vocational Rehabilitation. Thank you. So the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation is a department in the state of Wisconsin that helps people who maybe are injured at work or just injured in general, and they need help getting their feet back under them so they can get back into the workforce. And there's a whole state department that just is dedicated to this, really. And they have, I'm trying to think, like Fox Valley Tech and other, you know, WCTC, Waukesha County Technical College, you know, those kind of places, Milwaukee Area Technical College, those places will help people to get either a GED or education or specialized education or to get back in the workforce. Well, you have these vocational experts who their schooling, their training is to know what somebody could do. It doesn't have to be what they're good at, but what they can do. So you could be, you know, let's say you're
what about a truck driver?
A truck driver. Thank you. So you're a truck driver, but you're involved in a car accident, a car crash, and you injure your leg. And you can't be a truck driver because you have to have your right leg to push the pedal down, right? So you lose your range of motion, you lose the use of your right leg, so you can't drive truck. Well, you can't do that anymore, but there are things that you can do in the alternative, you know, from working at, well, maybe you could work at the same truck company answering the phones, and you could be a dispatcher instead of a truck driver. You're going to maybe lose wages. Maybe you will have a job that'll be a similar wage, but, you know, those kind of things. So that's what the vocational expert who works with the state and the federal government on some other cases to figure out what somebody's earning capacity is. Long story short, that's what we use, are those kind of experts, a vocational expert who has the qualifications that can come in and say, looking at this person's livelihood, what their schooling was, what their abilities are, and what their injuries are, this is what they cannot do in the future, and they lost that earning capacity. It could be, you know, they had their dream job and they lost it. That's a big deal. Or they were somebody who was a truck driver, but they didn't want to do that. But that's what they were, for better or for worse, going to do for the rest of their life. And because of the crash, they have to go to school, and school costs $40,000, and they could over time make more money than they could as a truck driver. Well, the losses would be the $40,000 in schooling, and then whatever the losses were to get you back to where you were before the crash. So that's a really unique, specialized person that would, you know, that would say that and have the qualifications to say that. So that's the kind of person we're talking about, Danielle, right?
Correct.
Okay. So the defense uses a jukebox expert, which I love that, because you put a quarter in and they're going to say whatever. And I've sadly had trials where the defense has had that. And gosh, I can think of one. I'm not going to say the expert's name because, yeah, I'm not going to say the expert's name, where it was just totally a hired gun, where the person said what they had to say. Oh, and there was another vocational. I had a trial a couple of years ago where it was an expert that I had used in the past, and the defense hired this expert for against my case. And that was kind of fun because he had to admit that my client was injured, and everything, you know, all the extra stuff that was said right out of the defense's playbook, I guess. And it was kind of transparent that this expert was saying kind of the extra stuff against my client just because he was paid by the defense. But anyway, now you've got me on tangents. We got to do a podcast about that because that's very interesting. Catastrophic accidents, catastrophic crashes. All right, so there's all those, I guess, concerns, problems immediately. Well, how do we get our bills paid, all that. So it's kind of all hands on deck, right? Where you have investigators, you have our paralegals, legal assistants, law clerks, all of them trying to help in the short term to figure out what to do. And then sometimes these cases take a while, right, Danielle?
Right, years.
So once the case goes into suit, how long could a case last once it's put into suit? You know, worst case scenario,
2.5 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, it could definitely be years upon years. And that's where it really gets frustrating because you have to talk to the client about what this means. Once a case goes into a lawsuit, what do we have to do? And what does the client have to do to get by from that point until the at-fault party finally takes responsibility and pays them for their medical bills? And in many cases, in this, you know, in these catastrophic crashes, you could get $20,000, a $20,000 bill for, you know, flight for life, right? I mean,
right.
That's pretty typical. So when you're staring on a helicopter ride for 20 grand, how do you pay that if for some reason you're fighting with your health insurance, if you have health insurance? You know, I think we've had those situations where health insurance has not paid the ER because they didn't say it was reasonable, or they didn't say it was in network. There was some claim we had where somebody was in a different state, they had insurance in a different state, came to vacation in Wisconsin, and the ER bills weren't taken care of because they're out of network. Well, so of course they're out of network because you're in Wisconsin and you might live in Arkansas for all we know. But yeah, so there's all those stressors that hopefully we can add some benefit and some stress relief for helping these people out. All right. What else? What else can we talk about? So right now we were talking about your case, Sam, because you're drafting a demand. So what does that mean? What stage is the demand in? I think I just said the stage right there, but what part of the case is a demand drafted?
Kind of towards the end, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like towards the end where basically I'll just go through all the records, say, all right, this is what happened with the accident. This was the damage to the cars. This was, or to the person. Here's any tickets that were written out or citations. And here's all the medical treatment that the person had. And just kind of go through, all right, like they had x-rays here, they had surgery here, they had this many days of physical therapy, and they were diagnosed with this, and they had these lasting damages.
Sure. And that's fantastic because that's, so you're going to look at the entire medical records file, you know, the investigation that was done, and really putting it together in a demand packet to send to the insurance company to say, insurance company, you need to pay your limits to our client. So you're working, and Danielle's worked in pre-litigation too. You still do pre-litigation stuff before it goes into suit, where you're gathering records. And that's an insurance company calling to offer the limits to you, right, Danielle? So with the demand package, you're gathering or you're putting together this file into a packet of information that's already been gathered by Danielle or by somebody who is a paralegal, a case manager, who's requesting the medical records, requesting the ambulance records, requesting the bills, requesting the police report, all that. And that's put together. And then you're creating that in a shorter synopsis to get to the attorney. And then the attorney goes over it and kind of has a general idea as to what's going on. And then there's a meeting about what the value of the case might be. Meaning, if we take this to trial, what would a jury award? A case valuation meeting. And that's when multiple attorneys sit down and say, okay, looking at this, this is what, in our opinion, a jury would award. And if the insurance company doesn't offer that, then the case goes into suit. And then we have the next stage. And then there's certainly conversations that we have along the way that we talk to the client about what all these different options mean. So the client can be informed and know what's behind door number one or door number two or things like that. So catastrophic crashes. So should I tell you what my one catastrophic crash story? And have I told you the story about the door, somebody knocking on the door?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, this is crazy. So years ago, I was at Fredert. So somebody's mother called me, said my son was involved in a crash. And I'm like, okay, I'll be there for you. I'll digress. This is why I always keep a suit and tie in my office, because no matter what's going on that day, I may not have any court, I may not have any appearances scheduled, but I want to look presentable. So I quick change clothes and run to the hospital to say, I can help you out. And I go up to whichever floor it was in Fredert, and Fredert is the highest level trauma center in Wisconsin, I believe, certainly alongside Madison. But Fredert, for most people who are horrifically injured, go to Fredert. So I'm there talking to mom and talking to the son. He is really, really injured. I mean, it was a head-on crash. The other driver was driving the wrong way on the highway. It was a bad situation. And I could talk about this for a while because there are all kinds of other facts and other things that happened in this case. But so we're sitting there talking, and we went through all the documents, how I can help, what are we going to do, you know, hurry up and get, kind of discover what's going on, because we didn't know, was this other person trying to die, I guess? Were they trying to commit suicide? Because it was pretty obvious this was in the main thoroughfare in Milwaukee. You know that you're going the wrong way. So, you know, are there insurance exclusions for this? Did they even have insurance? You know, what's going on? So we're going through all that, and I met with him for, I don't know how long, for quite a long time in the hospital room. And at the end of the conversation, nurse walks in, and then after the nurse walks in, the door is closed, and then somebody knocks on the door. And I continue to talk to my client and his mom, and the nurse walks over and opens the door, and I can hear in the back of my head, or hear in the back of the room, that she's saying something like, no, well, but he's here, or what? Well, but they're meeting right now. And then she comes over, and I was like, well, what was that about? And she said, well, that was the lawyer. But I said, you're meeting with your lawyer. And I was like, what is going on? So I get up and I go to the door, don't see anybody. I run down the hall and go to the elevator. Nobody was there. So what it was, and this is crazy, but this is something you'll read in books. They have runners. You know, there are people who, this is totally against the rules, but there are law firms that will go out and send people to sign up clients, literally chasing ambulances. This is where we get our, you know, because of situations like this, this is where we get a bad name for ourselves, because somebody was tipped off. So there's probably some nurse or some staff person or some doctor or somebody in the medical world that tipped off a lawyer and said, it's a horrific car accident here, send somebody down. And yes, I'm calling out the staff of Fredert, because I don't know how else that this could have happened. And this is years ago. So, but they said, we're the lawyer for this person. Can we come in?
Wow.
Damn.
So that's, you know, a catastrophic case. That's the other situation, is that you have just this crazy world that people are, you know, if this person, I don't know what kind of help they would have gotten if they would have had a lawyer who had the ethical, I don't know how to say it nicely. Now I'm being nice, but I don't know how should I describe the situation? ethics are in the gutter, maybe.
Morals.
Case of the missing ethics.
Yeah, the case of the missing ethics. Yeah, but that was unbelievable. And in that case, I still keep in contact with the client, my old client. He's doing fantastic recovery, certainly lifelong injuries, but really is doing a lot better than, you know, than he was that day when I saw him in the hospital.
Isn't that how they all used to do it, though? That's how it used to be back in the day.
Oh, man.
That's what they would do, though. You just pull all the police reports and run around trying to get a client.
Well, and I remember about 15, and now we're going on too many minutes here of podcasting, but years ago there was, God, this has to be 16, 17 years ago, a big name law firm that used to be really big, they're not that big anymore. The named person came to our client's door and said, you know, X, Y, and Z. And our client said, wait there, and went back in the house and called us and said, there's a lawyer here that's talking to me about my case and wants me to sign with them. And we're like, who? And we got the name, and then, you know, we called that lawyer and said, what are you doing? But it's like, wow, that's crazy. Are you taking any classes on ethics, Sam?
I actually have my first one this upcoming semester.
You better get an A in that.
I hope so.
Okay. If your professor wants somebody to come and talk about these kind of things and what not to do, or with things that I've seen in real life situations, my Lord. All right. That's it. I digress. But catastrophic crashes. So the thing with catastrophic crashes are they are life-changing, and there's a lot of stress that takes place immediately after the crash that luckily, you know, we have dealt with these cases before, and we understand what's going on and how we can hopefully alleviate some of that stress and make the right decision now. So 3 years from now, you're not worried, well, should I have said this? Did I do this? Or was this bill submitted to the right person or, you know, right insurance company? You know, there's all these things. The last thing you need is to second guess what you did immediately after a crash. So that's why you hire a law firm like ours, and, you know, have our attorneys and our staff to come and advise you and give you hopefully some peace of mind that what you're doing is the right thing. And you're not going to say the wrong thing that will maybe not hurt you today, but it'll hurt you, you know, months or years from now. All right. Danielle, thank you.
You're welcome.
Sam, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Have a good day. See you soon. Thanks.